The White Network presents Saturday Afternoon with Carolyn. Your host, Carolyn Yeager.
Good afternoon and welcome to my Saturday afternoon show. Today is July 21st, 2012. I am Carolyn Yeager and I'll be with you for the next 2 hours having a conversation with my guest for today, Alex Linder. Alex is a well-known white nationalist who runs Vanguard News Network and Forum, which has been online since 2000, 12 years now. Quite a record, according to the ADL, the Anti-Defamation League. You can find out everything about Alex Linder by reading his write-up at the ADL website. Isn't that right, Alex?
Well, you can find stuff they've written, and some of it's true, some of it isn't true, and a lot of it's very, very many years outdated.
Okay, well, I'm going to go through it here as I talk to you, and you can tell me what's true and what isn't true. But before I start, you know, if there's anything you want to say as an opening remarks or whatever to our listeners.
You said ADL, huh? I was thinking of SPLC because I saw they just put out in their quarterly another listing of top whites that they hate. And I was on there and they used a picture that was out of date. But ADL, I haven't checked that in 10 years. I don't know what they're saying.
No, I read the SPLC too. But I thought the ADL was better done. The SPLC is pretty nasty and aggressive, where the ADL is pretty factual. You know, I was written up by both of them, although I'm not on that list because I'm not important enough. I was going to check and see if they still had that write-up on me, but I forgot about it. I never think about these things very much. So I don't know if it's there, but probably somewhere. But the ADL seems to do a better job, is not quite so combative. So let's look at this, or unless you want to have something more you want to say.
No, I think most people probably know who I am, and the ones who don't can get a good impression of me through this show. And then if they go to VNN Forum, that's where I am pretty much full time these days. So.
Right. Okay.
Just go ahead.
Who is this Socrates who writes, who usually does this posting on the news network?
Well, that's his pseudonym that he uses, and he pretty much does the main page at VNN.
Well, that's what I wondered. I thought it was somebody, and then it dawned on me just yesterday, well, maybe that's you doing that using a pseudonym, but there is somebody who's taking
care of it. No. The reason VNN got any fame, or I got any fame, I wrote in a very satirical style, and I wrote what I called spintros, which are kind of spun introductions to the different pieces I would link to. This was all very new and exciting, you know, maybe 10, 12 years ago, and I did it daily for about 5-6 years, and then I said what I had to say. I started looking into different forms like radio and public activism, but Socrates pretty much runs it now. Sometimes I go by there and post something or respond to stuff, but I mostly post what I post on the forum and work at building that up over time. Give white people who visit my forum the best and clearest explanation of what's going wrong in the world, because almost everybody thinks their country, the USA or whatever, is off track. We explain to them why, and I fancy better than anyone else in the world. At least that's our goal.
Okay. Well, I think you do a good job. I do. And I think your forum is the easiest one for me of these large forums to go to and follow. I guess it's not as big as Stormfront, but it makes more sense to me than Stormfront.
No, it's
does.
Our forum is considerably smaller than Stormfront.
Yeah.
And it has a little bit of a different feel. We're not aiming for gigantic volume, but we did just tweak it the other day. It's actually running faster than it has been, so it's a little bit easier to post.
Well, good. You know, I don't post there. I try not to get on forums because I get all caught up in you know, as soon as you write something, people write back to you, and then there you are, stuck trying defending yourself.
A forum is one kind of activity. I'm not particularly a forum guy myself. I mean, I basically am interested in the structure and writing stuff and getting my own views out there, and as I said, organizing it over time so that you build up kind of a cumulative picture of what's going on. So we have, and I do that by means of sticky threads. So I concentrate on the overall organization. I'm not interested in gossiping with people or fighting with them or even really dealing with them at all, particularly. But I want people to have somewhere. I didn't even set it up. One of my supporters set it up. And, you know, it was for people who originally liked my writing, but the people who have kind of the same general mentality, I do find their way there, and we support free speech. I let anyone post. They don't have to be white. I have no way of verifying what they are. They just have to follow one of the few simple rules, and they can discuss anything. And I do like that it's not super huge. I find when they're super huge, you get lost a little bit.
Yes. Yeah, that's what I was trying to say. That's why I like it better.
I have
gone there lately now and then to look for certain topics and see what's being said. And I can function on that pretty well. But I've decided not to post on forums because I don't, you know, it's time consuming.
Understandable.
They're great. They're great for, I think we do need socializing places. And, you know, you need places to go.
That is a purpose that they serve.
Yeah.
There's definitely a sort of a forum type of person. I think probably there's more of those at Stormfront or maybe what Kelso's doing than at VNN. But at ours too, you do have a place where you can talk freely to people like you and you don't get blasted because you're not Semitically correct. So yes, there very definitely is a social value to it that you wouldn't get with just an ordinary website quite so much.
Okay, well, we've already got quite a few listeners. I'll just let you know, Alex. So you're drawing a lot of interest, as I knew.
Well, Carolyn, before we get started, let me say I really appreciate your having me on because I used to do my own radio show I called Radio Estina, and we also did Goyfire, and I haven't done them for about 5 years, and I still get, at least every month, I get one or two letters begging me to do another show, and I said, look, I've not been well. I don't want to do it. I'm very vain, and I don't want to do something that's not very good, and that's the reason I haven't done it. It's not my views have changed or anything else. So I appreciate your having me on, so because it will satisfy a lot of these people want to hear this stuff. So,
well, great.
I do appreciate it.
Well, of course, I appreciate you coming on. So that's mutual. Now, all right, let's get into you and your life. And you know, the main thing is, of course, here it says that we know that you at one time put out a paper. Newspaper, The Aryan Alternative. I have a couple copies of that paper that somebody sent me. I don't know what happened to that. You can tell us. And then you were also founded the White Freedom Party at one time.
Well, that was basically stillborn. I'm afraid that was more a product of a little bit of enthusiasm without... It was kind of driven by one of our guys, Rounder, who... in my view, created the best, well, not my view, I believe it's more or less objective. Rounder is a man who created probably the best white political party in the post-war era. And he got up to 500 men marching in the streets at various places in the South. And so he's still raring to go at it.
And that was called the White People's Party, or did it have a longer name?
I believe that's what it was called, and he has at VNN you can find, at his site you can find the background on it. But basically, he really put a scare into the federal government. He's not even allowed to live in the South, so he lives just outside the South in southern Missouri, which is pretty southern if you know Missouri. But they don't want him living there because even as an old man, he's such a force for organization. He's the most selfless man. He's hated by a lot of people, but he's the most selfless man I've met in racialism. He's hard charging. He's smart. He's an excellent organizer. And he's just old now. He's an older guy.
Well,
but let me say, he's also the one that spearheaded that paper. It's an irregularly produced paper. That means we might produce it again at some point. It just costs a heck of a lot of money. But Rounder's the one who found the printer, drove out there, picked it up, did all the finances, didn't take a dime for himself. And this is the kind of man he is. So I've always been on his side. But, yeah, we put out that paper from time to time. It's just a very costly thing. So, you know, we can't do it all the time. I figure about doing it about two times a year is worthwhile.
It's not dead. You still do it.
Well, we haven't done one for years, but we could do one if we wanted. Mm-hmm. So we probably will do one again at some point.
How do they keep this man from living in the South? I never heard of that.
Well, he was involved in a couple of court cases, and they had eventually some kind of restriction on where he lived.
Okay.
This is all becoming very dated now. It's becoming 20 years ago. But I believe that his ability to politically organize was what led initially to, like, the SPLC and the ADL trying to get trying to ram through, and eventually they did, these laws against paramilitary organization. They don't want white men training with guns out in the woods, and they can pass, you know, state or federal laws to ban that. Of course, Jews are still doing that with guns themselves. So it's kind of a carve-out, but I couldn't even cite you the actual law, but I know that the laws restricting that activity were caused by his successful political organizing.
Well, this is what so many people argue, that if we do something out in the open like that, or if we actually organize, you know, in real life, that it'll just be shut down and it won't do any good, and that's the kind of excuse for not doing it. It might be might not be an excuse. It might be a real reason.
It is a valid reason. I mean, you can do certain soft stuff that's not all that threatening, but the best example, I think the way to start this is to say half the people out there say, oh, we're committing suicide. We're doing it to ourselves. We must blame ourselves. And no. 1,000 times that is absolutely wrong. It is being done to us by the enemy. Where's your proof? Well, whites have never, ever voted to open the borders. Not one time. Even in California, you know, crazy kooks and liberals. Lived in California myself twice. Liked it quite a bit. The people there aren't necessarily liberal, just some of them. They voted to shut down. Every time a place like California or Arizona, we've seen more recently, votes to deny benefits to illegal invaders. What happens? Well, the usual suspects of the left sue. It gets kicked up to a federal court. The federal court throws out the legitimate democratic will of the people. So don't say that we're doing it to ourselves. No one ever voted to do all this. You can't vote and get rid of the bureaucrats and the judges who are making all these determinations. We're all put in place by, you know, a legal system that's completely dominated by Jews, a media system that's completely dominated by Jews, a political party system that is completely funded by Jews. This is an enemy, and this is what they're doing to us. So anytime a white organization, and not just a white organization, but even a black organization, tries to do something that's against the Jewish agenda, they destroy it. Just as they destroyed in the early decades of the 20th century, they destroyed Marcus Garvey's Back to Africa movement. Why? Because they didn't want blacks going back to Africa. They wanted them here whining about whites to be used for their civil rights push to destroy white neighborhoods, white society, and ultimately the white nation. They also destroyed the black self-help movement, right? They didn't want whites saying, hey, okay, we're not as smart as whites, but we can still do some things. Let's just settle in our own communities and work on what we can and stay out of the whites' way and enjoy the usufructs of living next to a people who are much more beautiful and civilized than we are. Did Jews do that? If they were a helpful tiny minority, they present themselves. That's exactly how they would have treated blacks and told them to react and explain things to them, been helpful the way Germans like you or I would, or people of German descent would be helpful the way they were helpful in Eastern Europe. No, did they do that? No. They told blacks, whine. Every problem you have is a result of the white man. And that's the course that black development took over the course of the 20th century. That's just the black side of it. That's not even the white side of it. The white side of it, we had the Ku Klux Klan. We had the traditional Catholics. What happened? These were men who had millions of followers, and they were undermined by the federal government working with the Jews. Why? For exactly the same reason they undermine racialist movements today. They undermine the Klan and every open white group in the 60s, because they're pursuing an agenda that's set by the people who run them, who are the Jews, and they are simply not going to allow us to openly do anything more than some weak little demonstrations and, you know, passing out some newspapers or whatever. So for us to truly successfully organize and fight back, we are going to have a military intelligence colonel that's equal and able to do battle with ADL and the FBI and the rest of ZOG. So that's simple. But I know I'm going on at length. Can I give you one good example?
Sure. Yeah.
This was kind of where VNN rose to fame. There was a man who was a member of National Alliance called Chester Doles. Chester Doles. National Alliance was divided into local units.
I thought it was Chester Bowles.
No. There's another guy named Bowles. This is Chester Doles, D-O-L-E-S. Okay. This is back around, say, 2002 or 3. Chester Doles ran a local unit for National Alliance. He was a prison guard. He had 11 kids. He lives down in Georgia. For all I know, he still does. But he was organizing these political meetings. He was getting dozens and even hundreds of people coming in, and among them were a lot of the county authority level people. So that you were starting to get some of the systematic approach down in Georgia for this guy 10 years ago that we now see, and we'll talk about this later, in Golden Dawn over in Greece. So he was getting systems. So what did the feds do? They were very threatened by this. The Jewish people running the country were very threatened. What do? They spend a couple of years and literally like $2 million investigating, and they trip him up on some gun technicality, and they throw him in prison for 10 years. So people say, oh, we're doing it to ourselves. Chester Doles didn't do it to himself. The conservatives always will find some reason that, oh, if he just acted. No, it's not if he acted differently. Show me the man and I'll show you the law. You know, I'll show you how to break him. I'll show you where he's. It doesn't matter who you are. They can trip you up for anything. It doesn't matter if you're everybody can be taken down. If they claimed, oh, you went. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I mean, anyone can be taken down.
That's
and
right.
These whites, if you prove that you're successful organizing, they will definitely go after you. If you even prove on the Internet you can build an audience, they'll go after you. So Doles was taken down and that whole thing was destroyed. That genuine white political activity was destroyed just the way the Klan had been destroyed, the German-American boomed, the traditional Catholic. So my point is I've given you white examples. I've given you white nationalist examples. I've given you a Catholic example. I've given you black examples of where the Jews are using the federal government to crush any budding opposition or developed opposition. Their powers weren't as strong in the first 20, 30 years as they are today. So they had to destroy groups after they'd been created and grown large. Today, they're good enough. They can basically snuff them out before they ever even get started. You see, so this is the terrible situation we're in. So anybody who's saying that we're doing it to ourselves or we're committing suicide is a liar and they serve the enemy, whether they realize it or not. And I will attack them because
all
of
right. Good for you. That's all right. Let's one thing. Can you turn your volume down just a little bit? Because I'm hearing myself come back on myself a little once in a while. Or is it? Are you already turned down as far as you can?
What I can do is talk a little less spit flyingly. And
okay.
It's the only other thing I could do is plug it. Said actually.
No, that's all right. Oh, no, it only happens once in a great while.
I got kind of a jerry-rigged setup right now because my headset's half broken. So
yeah, well, that's all right.
That's another reason I'm not doing any radio. Sorry.
It might not even be heard by the listeners. I'm not sure. All right, let me ask you then, how did you become racialized like this? How did you get to these ideas and how soon? Because it was well known that you were born in 1966 and you graduated from college in 1988 in California.
Pomona College.
Yeah.
I want to throw that in there because they would be absolutely ashamed and embarrassed to be associated with me at all. But the fact is I did earn a degree there in international relations. Now, I like to associate myself with them just because they don't like it.
International relations. All right.
Yeah, that was a big trendy major. It's a stupid major. There's no point to majoring in it unless you intend to go to Woodrow Wilson or become a diplomat. I should have majored. I shouldn't have gone to college at all. But if I did, I should have majored in English, actually, would have been more useful. Even religion would have been more useful than international relations.
Yeah, you're right. It was trendy then. Just like, so what is that? Social
sociology.
Sociology was so trendy for so long, and then there was political
science.
Political science, yeah, was another one.
Yeah, you're basically all you're learning in any of that is just Marxist derived theories.
That's
right.
It's
a waste of time. Everything I know certainly didn't come from college. At college, I learned the reality of how leftists are. And back then, how I got into racialism, I was writing conservative. I was an individualist at that point. I believed the right told the truth. People in the paper who were right-wing conservatives were telling the truth. All we needed to do was tinker with the welfare state and adjust the tax laws, and blacks would act just like whites did. Then I graduated, and I grew up upper middle class. I didn't live around a whole lot of blacks or Mexicans. And of course, back then, there were fewer of them in the country. And I lived in Orange County in the 70s. I didn't recall a heck of a lot of Mexicans around back then. But anyway, I graduated from Pomona in 88. I went out to D.C. and then I lived in the D.C. area for about 10 years doing various things. But I started in politics and I came to see, courtesy of Marion Barry, I'm like, wow, this black thing is not an individual problem at all. There's no social tinkering you can do that is going to turn these people into white upper middle class conservatives like the opinion writers pretend. I realized it was a collective racial biological thing that really all you can do with blacks is protect yourself from them. So that was when I kind of fully evolved into racialism.
All right. So you didn't have those ideas in college.
No, it's a little more complex. I knew that blacks, I knew that blacks were more criminal. I knew more or less instinctively that Jews were always leftist radicals who are always against me and anything I stood for. They smell you. They know that you're basically what they call a Nazi before you realize it yourself, even though I'm not a Nazi. But they see where you're headed before you know it. That's what makes them so effective. But I knew blacks were more criminal. I knew all the statistical data about them. I just didn't realize that it was so. It was a deeper thing than I thought. Like I said, I thought it could be changed because I'm reading National Review. I'm reading the conservatives. I'm reading William F. Buckley Jr. and all of his people. And I'm really believing the problems in the black community are a result of all the welfare state setting up the wrong incentives. And if you correct that, then blacks will just become like every other part of society. I somewhat believed that. And until I actually lived around blacks in D.C. where, you know, they're whatever, 80% of the city. And then you see that, no. They reelected Marion Barry while I was there, you know, after he'd been caught smoking crack on videotape. And that, and just watching the city, you're like, no, blacks are something radically different from whites, and there's no way in the world you're going to turn them into white conservatives or any kind of stable social force by social policy. It's ridiculous. So then I realized, like, oh, you know, 22 or whatever, I have been lied to by the right. The right is full of liars just the way the left is. They lie about different things. There may be, on the whole, they lie a little less, but still in the deeper stuff, not only do they lie about it, they lie in the same way the left does. That makes them, on the deepest stuff, liberals, or illiberal, as I prefer to call them, because they're totalitarian. They don't allow any disagreement on the stuff that matters and the stuff that they're wrong on, you know, race, Jews, and the rest.
Mm-hmm. So you were a researcher for Evans and Novak and American Spectator magazine when you're in Washington. Is that correct information?
Yeah, I was an intern for basically both of them. I did, you know, minor tasks and whatever. But the thing was, back then, you got to realize, I've talked about this a couple of times, I've written about it a couple of times. Back then, the internet didn't become big deal till about 95, to when most of the public, when I grew up, what everybody was doing was reading, who was at all intellectual or interested in things right, there were maybe two or three magazines in the country. There's National Review, there's American Spectator, and that was basically it. There was no internet. So I'm the last generation before the internet became mainstream and everybody had it from birth on. So, you know, to be able, it doesn't sound as, oh, you're an intern. Yeah, but.
Oh, I think it sounds like a big deal because I.
No, it was a big deal.
A big deal, yeah.
Told me, they chose me over people from Harvard and Yale, so I felt good about that. But, you know, my thing was, I want to write satire. I'm like, wait, I basically like Joker in the back. Wait till they get a load of me. They never seen anybody do it like I do it. So I'd written in college. I got more reaction than anybody had ever gotten writing for their papers. I knew I could do it. I knew I like P.G. O'Rourke. I like the humor. I like this stuff in the center. I like this stuff. I one of my intern tasks was I would type up checks for the writers and I would see, oh, gee, the only guy getting any money is, you know, a lot of them are getting a few hundred, and the only guy really getting into the four figures is like P.G. O'Rourke. That's what people want. They love that. Humor and whatever. If you can supply that, you can really make that money, but it doesn't matter. What I came to see was, I thought my approach of, look, the real powers that be are basically Jews, and they're using it to kind of sponsor blacks. Those are the real powers. That's who I want to go after. Like I had done a little in college, although not racially, not like I do now. But what I didn't realize was you can't do that because these things are fundamentally inherently liberal on the race stuff. And I actually showed the editor a piece I'd written making fun of the term off color or of color. That used to be a big thing back in the late 80s, you know, where people of color. So I wrote a whole column mocking that. And I showed it to him. And he just, in that moment, you could see I kind of changed in his eyes what I was. Because I was just some, you know, factotum doing stuff. You know, he's like, well, we're very, very careful about that kind of stuff. And so, you know, we were competing, me and this other guy were competing for an editorial position. They gave it to him. And that was kind of the turning point of my life when I was 22, because I already had an in where a lot of people, anybody who wanted to be somebody in conservative intellectualism would have wanted to get into one National Review and two American Spectator. And I had actually achieved it somehow. Now, it's not that I wasn't any better than all these other people. I'm sure there were a lot who were as good as me. I think actually they might have even brought me in just because I wasn't a Catholic like everybody else. And the woman making the decision who subsequently left was a Protestant. I think she might have liked having someone else who wasn't a Catholic there. So it's not like I had a threshold level of ability, but it's not like they couldn't have found, you know, 500 other people who were equally well qualified to do that kind of thing, although not to write the kind of satire I could. But since they, as I learned from typing up the checks, I'm like, wow, I always knew the left was dominated by Jews. But what I didn't realize was, like, I'm like, half the writers we're paying are also Jews on the right. I'm like, Jews aren't conservative. All the Jews I've known were left wing. Well, it's a whole new world, you know. And again, if I'd had the internet, I would have known this stuff when I was literally 9 or 10 years old. But here I am, 22. I don't know any of this because unless you had somebody to teach you all this, and I didn't in my family, they were just ordinary Republicans. You don't know it, and you couldn't really get it out of books. There weren't the internet has just completely revolutionized things in terms of how quickly you can go from knowing nothing to knowing all you need to know. You see?
Yeah.
It won't even make sense to people who are like 20. It's a completely different world. But that's how the world was right up until really about 1995.
Well, that's
and I'm
why
talking
when
about
they say,
88, 89.
Yeah, when they say, well, we should have known. I have said several times now that we didn't know. We didn't know that what all this was leading to when we, you know, the Civil Rights Act and this going on and so on. We did not know. We did not ever imagine that it could end up like it is today, that we could lose power so fast and
sure.
So many immigrants could be brought in and all of these things could happen. Because we didn't have information like on the internet, and we just depended on the regular news channels, and so you're not blaming us altogether for what's happened. I don't blame those generations. I'm part of that generation. How it was. You know, you didn't see it coming.
I've really found in talking to people who were kind of coming of age in the 50s and 60s, they just inherently have so much more. They have an almost ineradicable trust that authority ultimately is trying to do the right thing. They may screw up a lot, but deep down they're really trying. And you're like, you just cannot disabuse them of this notion. You're like,
well,
no,
you're
no,
right. You're right. And I, you know, I never got that. There might be people of my age that did get that, but I never really got that, felt that way. So I never got caught in that. But,
well, that's good.
But it's true that many feel this way. They can't get their head around the idea that all these leaders of ours, all these politicians and so on, don't give a damn. You know, that they're not really trying, and all these economists and all the people working for the government and all the people in the universities, whatever, that they're not really trying to do the best they can do.
Well, they're serving a different agenda than the one they proclaim to the public. You just look at the movies from the 50s, and there's just a moral seriousness to the way the characters conduct themselves compared to today. And all these people had maybe three TV channels, and heck, TV didn't even really get going until about 1960. And they just really tended to see that the authorities are the same basic kind of people as us. They have the same basic motivation, but that's not true now. And maybe it was at some point in U.S. history, but it hasn't been true for a long, long, long time.
No, it wasn't true. It wasn't true then.
We
had no reason not to. We just didn't have any clue, you know.
That's what makes me angry. You know, I'm descended basically from German peasants, you know, who are farmers, just like tens of millions of Americans. You know, people, we did it. No, these people were out in the middle of the country. They voted, you know, they read about, I mean, You're gonna blame these people who are rural farmers who, you know, up until 1900 they hardly went, you know, 20 miles from where they lived.
That's right.
And you're gonna blame them? No, if you want, yes, whites deserve some blame, but it's basically the elite who founded the country and failed to see what was going on and who some of them sold out. Henry Adams writes about this in one of his books, in the late 1800s or right around 1900. I mean, these are the people to blame. It goes back a long time. It's not the mass of white people in America, the mass of white Americans, to be redundant, has not voted for the stuff that's killing us.
That's why I think there's hope for getting through to these people, if you can do it. You know, it's a job, but I think they can be reached. All these massive people, to some extent,
that you can reach almost anyone. Like one to one, you can reach them a little. I think to really persuade them, though, well, that gets into a different thing. But I don't really believe it's a matter of persuasion so much as overcoming fear. And without us having the, you know, as long as Jews can punish people who overtly say what's obvious like we do, then you're never going to get the mass of people, even if they believe you and are on your side at the deepest levels. I think they are. I mean, they always, white people marry white, and when they relocate, they move to whiter areas. That proves that their default setting is we want to be around white people. Now, see, they won't say that. That's not on their lips because it's not Semitically correct, and it can get them in trouble on their job, but that's what they really believe. So they are with us, but they are not going to join us until we can remove some of the pain, or unless the external pain of going along with this medically correct BS that's killing our society becomes strong enough that they just say, screw it, don't worry about it any longer. I'm just going to side with the whites because this thing is falling apart. I was thinking of his two lines on a chart kind of that are approaching. You know, they're losing the system. If the system fails to supply benefits, they have less incentive to be Semitically correct. I always use Joe Sobern's term because it points to the Jew that's creating the political correctness instead of covering it up as political correctness does.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, let's move on to this. You are called a white supremacist. I'm back on the ADL page. But do you consider yourself a white supremacist, or would you use a different term?
Labels are for the other guy. I'm just a normal person. I wouldn't say separatist or supremacist. I call myself a white nationalist, but really I don't call myself anything. I just make points and try to get other people to go along. It's the other guy that I label, which is what they're trying to do to me. They call me white supremacist because they think it's the worst thing they can call me. Apart from a neo-Nazi. They always call you a neo-Nazi. Anybody who criticizes Jews is called a neo-Nazi. I don't like being called a Nazi because I'm not a Nazi. I believe in decentralized power. I believe in a racial collective. But within that, I believe in decentralization. You can say those are contradictory, whatever, but that's my vision of how we should live among ourselves as whites. So I favor the decentralization of power. I don't like having a huge monopolistic centralized government. I think, leaving race aside, that's what causes all these problems. It causes or exacerbates every problem we have. And this is the disturbing thing to me is how many people on our side are fans of a big, centralized, omnipotent, dictatorial government. I am very much against that. My German ancestors were here before the country was founded. And we beat Britain. We set up a country for free white adults. That's who our politics ought to be aiming at. And today, God, that's almost the elite. I'm aiming at the right side of the bell curve, not the left side. People who want their ass wiped by government, and they want health, education, welfare supplied by government. And a heck of a lot of German descended people support that because they are 48 socialists. I don't support that. It's up to the people to make their own private arrangements. The only thing the government is supposed to do is collectively racially defend us. That's how I would redo it if we had an all-white government after we took power. But right now we have to worry about taking power.
All right. It also says that your influences were William Pierce, Kevin MacDonald, and Revelo Oliver. Kind of a strange group there. They're just picking out people they don't like, I think.
I'm certainly influenced by those three. I've read them. I've thought about what they say. With some of them, I disagree on certain points. But generally, they're brilliant men who are right about damn near everything. So I can't complain. They're not the only ones who influenced me. I'm influenced by Oscar Wilde. I'm influenced by Axl Rose. I'm influenced by Edmund Burke. I have a conservative intellectual background. I mean, I'm influenced by all kinds of people. H.L. Mencken. These are the people that I look to. It's not enough to be right. You have to be brilliant. You have to be entertaining. You know, you have to assume you're right and convey that through jokes, not argue. Arguing is basically for weak people. You know, our cause is so obvious. It doesn't need to be argued. Now, I'm technically, we have to. We have to put it out there. But really, honest to God, our cause having to argue itself, as I like to say, is like a supermodel going around having to argue to people that she's beautiful and persuade them when it's self-evident that our cause is right. So assume that and act like it. Act like you actually believe it, and don't be defensive and using footnotes and little arguments. I'm going to prove that we're right. Christ, anyone can see that we're right. No one wants to live around niggers, not even other niggers, usually.
That's why you think racist satire is the way to go. Is that right?
It's my way to go. It's not the only way to go.
Yeah,
what I mean is you can do a straight news source that's very valuable that you know, treats the news objectively in the standard journalistic format. That's perfectly fine. That's what Kevin Strom and National Alliance did after I did. The key is you do something daily and you build up people, you build up fans. You're going to build up more fans if you do, as I said, if you provide the humor, you can genuinely do it on a professional level, you'll get more people than you will for, you know, most straight stuff, because you can get straight stuff anywhere. And even if you get leftist, Jewish, communist straight stuff, you can still read between the lines. But I'm not at all down talking having just a straight nationalist news service. We need that, and we have a number of them out there today. But I was always trying to provide less the news than like a stew, like a prepared deal. That sort of spin, like thought put into it, effort. I'm trying to educate and entertain you. I'm not just saying, here's a link to a story about a black crime, another flash mob. It's boring. So, yeah, satire is what I wanted to do and do. Satire and analysis.
Okay.
Essays, lines. You come up with names. You come up with labels for your enemy. This is where you get real value. It's much less an argumentation. Not too many people. The idea that there's some body of people out there waiting and open to argumentation, not really. By ones and twos, by dribs and drabs, they kind of awake. But that's not really what brings people over, and that's not why people aren't on our side. They're not on our side because they're afraid, and their fears are quite legitimate. But if you're trying to make a name, you're trying to get these ideas out there, it's far better to coin your own terms, to come up with simple slogans, which the intellectuals hate because their tendency is to over-complexify things. So that's what I always focus on, being funny, sloganeering, but also being analytically solid in the middle of it. That's your spine and your backbone.
Okay. No, that sounds good. Now, speaking of coining your own words, what do you think of the white rabbit business of anti-racist is another name for another word for anti-white? What's that guy called?
Bob Whitaker. Yeah.
Yeah, but
that's
another
good
name.
That's the right way to do it. Using anti-white. I hope Whitaker doesn't claim he coined anti-white, because he didn't. But I used that from day one when we started here. But he's absolutely right. We should always never use the enemy's terms. Always use your own term. Politics is a physical battle, but to the extent it's an intellectual battle, it's less an argument battle over it. It's a battle of terms. And for every political issue out there, okay, that homosexuality is a good example. Even the term issue itself is a Jewish thing, as opposed to problem or disagreement. So for everything out there, the Jews have come up with a term to describe their enemy that makes him morally evil. So like if you oppose them on homosexuality, you're a homophobe. There's never any space for anyone to oppose them and retain their morality and their decency. You see what I mean? So we have to fight back by having our own set of terms for them and never using their terminology.
Well, I totally agree with that. It is hard to remember not to use their terminology, since it's generally used everywhere by everyone.
I know. Well, people are confused. What bothers me is the PhDs are the ones who won't do it. They're always, you know, every time someone like McDonald uses a term like anti-Semitism, well, maybe he feels he has to. You're using the opponent's embodied argument in that bogus term. You know, it's one.
Even like the term Holocaust. I once made a vow I wasn't going to use the word Holocaust anymore. I was going to use deportation of the Jews, but I find it just about impossible to communicate.
It is just about impossible. So what you do then is you always put it in quotations so that it's clear that you're talking about it as a term. You're not just accept. I go farther than that. I do that. I put them. I forget what it's technically called, but I use the and the Holocaust separately, but that's taking it. Most people won't understand because people are completely illiterate these days, but never use – when you use the other man's terms without putting them in quotations to show that you're disputing its use as a valuable term, and obviously then you're not using your own term, you're already basically seeding the argument that, yeah, the Holocaust is real. Yeah, it exists. Yeah.
The
minute
that's
you
right.
use it, you're – yeah. And see, they already have all the high points. They already have the mass media. They already have the cable satellite uplink. So you're already playing on uneven ground. So what you can do is use your own terms and your own frames and put the argument the way that your side wins, and they're the bad guy for opposing you. This is terminological, real verbal warfare. My God, if we're not going to fight in the streets, it's the least we can do. But oddly enough, the smartest people are the hardest ones to sell on this, because – they got their degrees by sitting on their ass in the library and being conventional and not challenging people. And, you know, they're scared of anything that's basically funny or seems too simple and crude. But that's where the change is. And it's not just me saying that. It's the people who made the change. It's people like Golden Dawn and people like Hitler. They show you how it's done. It's not done by super complex arguments, you know, and millions and millions of essays.
Yeah.
It's done by speaking, and it's done simply, and it's done by understanding the audience you're trying to reach and putting it in a language they can understand. That does not mean being unprincipled. It means putting your argument in the right form to get to these people and showing by your eyes that you have the balls to back up what you're saying. Then will they get over their fears and begin to join you? That was the experience in Germany, and that would be the experience today in America. Look how far Ron Paul has gotten. He's an unattractive old man with a not very good voice, and who has all the young, excited white people out there? Ron Paul does. Why? Because he's principled. He manifestly believes what he says on everything except race, the deepest issue where we disagree with him. But on everything else, he's solid, consistent, principled, reliable, and believable. And in return, he gets a big white following. People, he's lost. The media hates him. Yeah, but he's building a ground force in the Republican Party to try to eventually take it over. Will he succeed? I don't know. But the point is, he's actually got some revolutionary type dynamism in his people. We could do the same thing. It's my argument. But we probably would need someone with a military background. We need people around him who are willing to kill and die because of all the things I mentioned earlier about how easily the feds are able to suppress this kind of activity through illegal means. And that's another of my agitation points. Keep it safe and legal. Keep it safe and is the enemy keeping it safe and legal?
No.
So we're talking about the genocide of the white race, but we're not willing to jaywalk? Are you kidding me? You just shut up about legality. What Hitler said is, you know, as long as the state sticks to the legal means, I will too. What more do you got to say? Talk about legality. Point out where the state is being illegal.
There you go. I think it comes from weakness, cowardice, and laziness.
And these things
come from.
Carolyn, you're right. And that's the conservative mindset. I'm not a racist. I don't doubt my opponent's intention. Oh, I sure as hell doubt their intentions. They're not well-intentioned in the slightest.
No.
I saw that personally in college when I was a conservative. They did all kinds. I was denounced by the college president and most of the deans, some of them with specific letters. The students on my paper conspired against me. The Jewish female editor and one of the WASP rich liberal editors conspired against me. I mean, it was just talk about a real education and how the world works. These people are the farthest thing from well-intentioned. They're vile, hateful cultists is what they are.
Yeah, and then the people will say, well, we don't want to behave like they do. Well, why not? I mean, I don't get that either. We're not going to lower ourselves to behave like that. Well, they win because they behave that way.
Well, you see, that's the thing. When you're in a fight, I mean, if the other guy goes lower than you do, you either lose the fight or you respond with equally low means. You don't have that. These people act like they're in a vacuum where they can just – we can win – they want to believe they can win in a way that is safe and comfortable for themselves rather than looking at the objective reality that here's what the opponent – that's why it's so easy to sell them the idea that, we just have to keep it safe and legal and, we're doing it to ourselves. But the reality is opposite, and they don't want to face that because it will push them out of their comfort zones if they're serious. But most of them aren't serious. They're just conservatives. They're just whining about stuff. You want to be a radical and truly change things, you have to accept, no, our opponents are evil. They are Jews primarily, along with white sellouts, and here are the illegal means they are using to defeat our organizing, and deal with that realistically. Now,
another thing that they do is to put it off into the future. I don't like that so many people who think that they are spokesmen say, we have to wait for the big crash to come. You know, we have to wait for this financial crash, which is definitely coming, and then we'll make our move. Or they're going to wait for something that's going to come when the time is right, and they say the time isn't right now. To me, that's just putting off. That's another of these methods to not have to do anything.
If you can't do one thing, then you got to do something else. You know, if a gigantic crash did come, it would certainly be easier to do what I call the hard side. But even if we can't do the hard side today, we could still do the soft side. We could still. How do Jews inculcate Judaism in their little rats? Well, they go to synagogue, they do the high holy days, they have Hebrew school, right? They inculcate these kids 2-3 hours after, here's what it means to be a Jew. All the world will be against you. They will all hate you because you're so wonderful. You know, you're the chosen of God and they are nothing but dirty animals. They inculcate this in their, now we wouldn't inculcate that in our kids. What if we had Aryan schools? What if we had a home, look at the, one of the biggest movements in the last 20 years, homeschooling. It's already taken away, you know, moving on 10% of the public school because people don't like what's taught in there. They still have to pay for it. The point is, what if you had a curriculum that wasn't Christian and like most curriculums are, and overtly was racial and said, here's your background. This is a tradition you want to be part of. And that's an example of probably the most important soft thing we could do that really the Jews can't do too much about. Because the ones it's created, it's out there on the internet. They can't destroy it. And whereas if you do the hard political organizing, it's much easier to destroy because it's just a matter of taking down a man or infiltrating a small party. You see?
But once again, if we created Aryan schools and parents chose to send their children to these private schools, the government would intervene and wouldn't allow
I'm not talking about, you know, brick and mortar places, though. I'm just talking about a curriculum that anyone could use. If you have one family teaching that, they can't do anything about that. Not really. Oh. I mean, it
teaching
would be much harder
children.
For them. Yeah, if you tried to build like a big giant, you know, 500 person school, you could have trouble with it for sure. But I'm just talking about having a curriculum that anyone could use or any group. What is homeschooling? It's either one family or typical, or it could be two or three. There's all kinds of different ways to work it, but it's a much harder thing to really get at if you're the powers that be than like a formal organized party where all they got to do is send somebody in to be your head of security or whatever. And if you don't, typically these white groups don't have professional means of vetting their newcomers. So they get someone who's right next to the guy running it, collects all the information, and then they sue the guy or they take the guy down somehow, you know, like Matt Hale or whatever, or Chester Doles or any of them. They take him down on some technicality and boom, he's locked up for 40 years. It's easy for them to infiltrate these political groups. So on the hard side, what can we do? People like me or you can talk, but, and that's good. That's helpful. It's necessary. But honestly, you almost have to have someone with a military background to really start a true party, someone who truly knows this is how you organize militarily. This is how you do intelligence to make sure that you're not being infiltrated. If you had that, I really believe you could create a force very much like Ron Paul that would run through everything on the right. I'm talking all the way through Fox News, just like a missile through cheesecloth, you know, because there's nothing hard or solid out there at all. It's all people like Romney. They're just clowns. They just represent big money. They don't stand for any principle at all. You know, get something out there that truly represents white people. Who knows how far it would go? Of course, the media would hate it, but that's just the situation. They hate what Ron Paul does, too, and he's still gotten pretty far.
Well, what do you think of somebody like J.B. Campbell, who speaks out and says that all these groups of people should be killed, that people need to get their guns out and start doing this, and they need to shoot their way through roadblocks when they come to one and so on. Well, and he's allowed to do that. You know, he gets away with saying that, but is that realistic? I mean, how would we follow something like that? He has a background in.
I'm not saying what he's saying is wrong. I'm saying he's not doing it though. You know, that's the problem you get to on that stuff. You have to.
That's right. He's not. It doesn't seem like he's organizing anything.
You have to. You know, I'm careful about what I say because there can be legal repercussions to it, and it doesn't even necessarily matter that what you say is technically legal. The cops have a saying. You can beat the rat, but can you beat the ride? And for example, Bill White did a magazine and had, you know, Obama on the front with the hair trigger of a gun, and it said "kill this nigger" with a question mark. Mm-hmm. Now that's not illegal; that's legal. But they still put him through, you know, a 3-year ringer that's still going on for publishing that. Even though eventually, after 2-3 years, technically that was legal. They threw out basically most of the charges against him. So, you know, he didn't really gain anything by that, but they were still able to illegally harass him. So anytime you start talking, I use rhetorical violence myself, but I don't say this person should be killed, even though that is technically legal. It technically is legal. I don't say it. I'll say the Jews should be exterminated because I believe that. And it's obvious from what they've done historically that there's no other way to cope with them. But, you know, that's rhetorical violence. It's perfectly legal in America, at least. But
well, but the, you know, the more that's used, the more that they are on the warpath to have that made not legal, illegal.
Well,
and if we would lose for, there's all these arguments that
I don't know. I'm not sure they necessarily they'll use that as, oh, you're a horrible, evil neo-Nazi who wants to exterminate Jews, and they will actually use that themselves, and that's why a lot of people think that if you say something like that, you're serving them, and you are a little bit. That's true, but that's not the reason I say it. I say it because I honestly believe when you study European history, there's no other conclusion to come to. Contrary to the church's position, which is that, you know, oh, they just need to be converted, whatever. They can't change. It's a biological thing. 99% of the species that ever existed on Earth are extinct. So even if you believe in God and morality and whatever, God has allowed 99% of the species to go extinct. He doesn't have any problem with extinction. If we make Jews extinct, he'll be perfectly happy with it. Same thing if they make us extinct. And they're trying to. They're manifestly trying to genocide us. We have every reason to fight back. I don't even say right. I don't like the language of rights and morality. I think it's somewhat ridiculous. I go for, yeah, if you want to live in this type of society among other people, you have to act a certain way and control yourself. That's as far as I go. I don't see anything absolute about it, but that's a different thing. But yeah, anyone who's talking about violence, you have to be careful. When you, the stuff Hal Turner was saying, I said for years, I wouldn't say that. I believe I would be arrested if I said some of this stuff. And I thought it was very definitely because of his bearing and the things he was saying, very definitely possible that he was with the feds. And sure enough, that's what it turned out to be. J.B. Campbell, I'm just not that familiar with. Other than I've liked stuff I've seen that he's written. But yeah.
Yeah, you know, I like what he writes too. I love it. But yet when you think about the whole thing, you wonder what the heck. You know, well, I just don't know. I have questions, but they're not answered.
You have to know what the technical laws, first of all, to know what you're legally allowed to say and not say. But then you have to know the practical law. Like, what are you practically not going to say unless you're pretty darn sure you're not going to get busted for it? And that's where your informants like Hal Turner come in. He was saying stuff like this and this judge should be assassinated. You can't really say stuff like that. You are going to get messed with, even if it is technically legal. And it actually is technically legal to say that this person should be. It's just an opinion. But as a practical matter, it's not an intelligent thing to say.
No.
And anyone who agrees with our general points knows who the bad guys are. If you're not in stuff like this, there's no such thing as a threat. Either you act or you don't. It's actually more dangerous to spout bogus rhetorical threats than it is to actually carry out the act a lot of times, because when you say stuff, you're creating a paper trail that can be used against you in court. Whereas if you act, they have to produce the body and prove that you did it. So,
well, the Jews are making more and more of a case, I think, for actually limiting free speech more than it already is, and even getting rid of it. And you know, if we think they can't accomplish that, you know, people are so we're so laid back about these things. We think, oh, they can't get rid of our. That's just the. You know, that's so American, you know, free speech. Well, look at all that's been gotten rid of already. And people they can't get their head around it. They can't believe that you could get rid of habeas corpus. But somehow it's kind of been gotten rid of.
Sure.
They can get rid of this. And this is why the more that we exercise these things and insist on them, the more they're going to go after them to destroy them. So we have to take that into consideration and not do it foolishly.
Absolutely. Look at most of Europe. As you know from your dealing with revisionism, there's 15, 16, 17, 20, I don't know, countries in Europe that ban speech about the Holocaust, whatever that is.
I think it's 17.
Yeah, a huge number. Do Americans know that? Not one American in probably 500 is really aware of that. They might know a little about you can't say racial stuff. Britain, the UK, but also look at Canada. They create this culture where free speech is bad. It's bad to say anything that isn't nice, and that becomes encoded into law. Jews created the concept of hate speech, and look how successfully they spread that in America. They use their political control to have that bogus concept, completely bogus concept, encoded into law. You see, I always like to say, look, there's like a couple million recorded, you know, violent or interracial, violent crimes a year. I can't remember if it's violent or interracial crimes. 90% of the interracial crimes within that, let's say, I think it's violent crimes a year, right, that are recorded by the different sheriffs, and they're forwarded on to the FBI and they put out a report. And the Jews come up with the concept of hate crimes. Well, what is that? Well, it's like 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 mostly verbal altercations. And yet look at how this stuff is discussed in the media. Real crime, hate crime is the opposite of real crime, just the way social justice is the opposite of justice. See, they always have some trick term that fools these people because they're stupid, gullible Germanic peasants. I won't include you, but I'll include myself. You know, who just, authority, it's probably right. You know, they're probably well motivated. hate crime, that sounds perfectly reasonable to me. I mean, well, they wouldn't say it if it was bad. And you have to train gullible Germanic peoples, as America basically is, to be more sophisticated and see through this stuff. 7,000 crimes, most of which are, hey, fuck you, nigger, you know, for is maybe 3,000 of them, is not the same thing as a bunch of rapes and murders and armed robberies and flash mobs like we're seeing all the time now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you can't get any sense of the disproportion of this into people's heads, how ridiculous is the 7,000 mostly non-crimes is made to outweigh 2 million violent crimes? You know, at least
I don't think craziness. That those who are supposed to be white people's spokesmen, this goes for websites, it goes for radio programs and radio networks where we're coming up to our end of our first hour. And I don't think that they are doing the job on this as well as they should be doing. I really don't, and that's why I've come up with the kind of criticism I have. Well, Alex, I want to tell the listeners that during the break here, we've got about 30 seconds. You can listen to the music for 5 minutes, and then we'll be back. And I'm going to go over my mail. I've got some comments, some questions, or some things for you. I'm going to see what's there, and then when we come back, we are going to get into the directed idea about where white nationalism should go. I think we've kind of led ourselves right up to it, and also talk about Golden Dawn and take the questions from the callers. And so everybody stay around, and we'll be back in 5 minutes after this lovely musical piece, which is one of my favorites.
Well, how do you do, young Willie McBride? Do you mind if I sit here down by your graveside and rest for a while, need the warm summer sun? I've been walking all day and I'm nearly done. I see by your gravestone you are only 19 when you joined the Great Fallen in 1916. I hope you died well and I hope you died clean. Our young Willie McBride, was it slow and obscene? Did he beat the drum slowly? Did he play the fife slowly? Did they sound the death march as they lowered you down? And did the band play the last post and chorus? Did the pipes play the flowers of the forest? Did you leave it a wife or a sweetheart behind? In some faithful heart is your memory enshrined. Although you died back in 1916, in that faithful heart are you forever 19? Or are you a stranger without even a name, enclose them forever behind the glass frame, in an old photograph torn, battered and stained, and faded to yellow in the brown leather frame? Did he beat the drum slowly? Did he play the fife slowly? Did I sound the death march as they lowered you down? Did the band play the last post and chorus? And did the pipes play the flowers of the forest? The sun, now it shines on the green fields of France. There's a warm summer breeze that makes the red poppies dance. And look how the sun shines from under the clouds. There's no gas, no barbed wire, there's no gun firing now. But here in this graveyard, it's still no man's land. The countless white crosses stand mute in the sand. To man's blind indifference, to his fellow man, to all generation that were butchered and damned. Did he beat the drum slowly? Did he play the fife slowly? Did they sound the death march as he lowered you down? And did the band play the last post and chorus? Did the pipes play the flowers of the fall? A young Willie, my bride, I can't help wonder why. To those that lie here, know why did they die? And did they believe when they answered the call? Did they really believe that this war would end war? Well, the sorrow, the suffering, the glory, the pain, the killing and dying were all done in vain. For young Willie McBride, it all happened again, and again and again and again and again. Did they beat the drums?
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Carolyn Yeager with Saturday Afternoon with Carolyn, and my guest is Alex. All of a sudden, I forgot your name, Alex.
Linder. That was a good song, too. It really made me think about all the millions and millions of it's so crass to say quality genes just, you know, run into machine guns in World War One, but, you know, what a waste, indeed.
Well, nice song. It's not crass to say it. It's part of our great tragedy that should be appreciated more, should be understood more by more people, what happened to us in the 20th century and why. So we'll get into that just as we're going to start talking about how our movement should function to the best effectiveness. Here's an email from Neil from, I think he's from Michigan. This is somebody who I've known. Do you think that there will ever be a pro-white group that will truly be effective, that will not be taken down by the feds? George Rockwell, Matt Hale, and Bill White of the American National Socialist Workers Party were some of the very best. They were all innocent of what happened to them. What do you have to say about that?
Well, see, here's the thing, right? I can run my yap with hyper-perfervidity, you know, and that's what I do. I write and I talk, but see, I don't have a military background. I can't plausibly claim that, you know, I know how to organize and whatever. And that's partly why I wanted to talk about Golden Dawn, because the guys running that party, just like Adolf Hitler, they have a military police background. You almost have to have that. Neither do I have a security background. I don't know. I don't really like computers, honestly. If I liked computers, I would have started VNN at least, and believe me, I regret this, at least 5 years earlier. But I hate dealing with technical stuff. But you have to have this technical expertise apart from everything I've said. You want to create something real in the world, you have to have guns and you have to have computer experts at a level that is able to basically fight with the very best. And that means the ADL / FBI, which might as well be the same group.
Mm-hmm.
You see, so the men who have that expertise have to come forward and you know, I tried to reach them as much as I tried to reach anyone, but, you know, they just don't seem to be there at this point. And see, like I mentioned Rounder earlier and how successful he'd been. Well, he had that background. He's a Green Beret in Vietnam.
Okay.
And you have to have
well,
that.
Well, Bill White was pretty technically savvy, or at least he said he was. And
who
he
was
can
that?
Do a lot, Bill White. He could do a lot, but you know, he seemed to have just pushed things too far over and over again. And he didn't think he, I guess he thought he was too smart to be touched or something. And
why does clinically, psychologically, he's not like a normal person. I'm someone, I have mixed views about him. He really did VNN a lot of harm. And it's a long story, not worth going into. But the only reason I kept paying attention to what he did, because I think he was one of the very few, is or was, who genuinely understands Zog and how it operates and how you have to operate to mess with it. It's just that he, for psychological reasons that are genetic, I've met him and talked to him only once, but that's all it takes, is not able to, and because he lies so much and hurts people so much, is unable to attract the kind of people. But he's one of the few who has the intellectual ability to understand what you need to do, and a lot of the technical ability, both on the writing and the computer side, to actually be able to hit back against it. Whereas these other guys are just basically conservatives. All they want to do is write essays and collect money. Mm-hmm. Now, for me, and am I any different? I guess I'm not really any different other than, geez, I'd love.
Well, it seems like you have never sold out at all.
No,
like
I've never,
you say,
I've
with your,
never
with
sold
your
out.
With your talents and your abilities, you could have made a good career for yourself.
Well,
and
hey,
instead you came and did this.
Carolyn, if they'd let me criticize blacks and Jews, I'd happily be writing, you know, all kinds of satire, mockery, and spoofs for American Spectator right now, and I guarantee their audience would be eating it up. Guarantee it. Yeah, but the Jews took over. They won. They control, you know, the conservative movement. So I do what I do, and no complaints or whining about it. VNN's brought me all kinds of great things. Oh, you sacrifice. I haven't sacrificed a damn thing. VNN has brought me all kinds of great things. You know, one of my favorite writers, he's kind of a faux radical, but Hunter S. Thompson, you buy the ticket, you take the ride. You know, I knew what I was getting into. I pre-thought it all the way through. So yeah. I'm totally happy. But, well, I'm not totally happy, but
yeah,
there has to be a mature understanding and acceptance. No, I've sacrificed so much. I can't stand when people say that. What did Nietzsche say? You got to love the struggle.
You should be doing it because you want to do it.
Do you know what, Carolyn? Before I started VNN, I was going nuts. I was becoming a complete asshole to people. I had all these. I'm like, damn, I know I got stuff people want to hear. I got to be able to. It's killing me that I'm writing this technical stuff. The minute I did VNN, all these psychological irritations just vanished. I'm like, yeah, now I can write stuff every day, get it out there. And I got exactly the response I knew I would get. So you feel personally vindicated, but that's personal. This is not, yeah, of course you have your personal goals and ambitions. So what? You have to make yourself part of this larger cause that is very important for all of our children and our grandchildren. That's what we're here to serve. So I want to be around people who I don't think are in it for themselves, like Rounder. For all the criticism he gets, he's not in it for himself. And I hope I can be, you know, 80% of that. And that's what I'm trying to do. And show people the way and not worry about stuff. And that gets into the whole thing, though, of what we need to do as a movement.
Just to
finish the comment, to Neil, was it? Neil, you got to have people able to, I would curse here, but I'm not going to, out of respect. You have to have people who are able to mess with the people running the country on their level. I can mess with them verbally. There is not a Jew I cannot out-argue. There's not a Jew I can out-neologize, right? But I don't have any technical expertise, and I don't have any military expertise. People who have Jew equivalent expertise on that level have to come forward. And if I try to do everything, I'll fail. I can only do what I can do, given my body and my mind and my abilities. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you I can go out and, oh, I'm starting the Great White Holy Smokes, you know, send us, you know, 10% of your annual income to my post office box and whatever. Okay. As long as you keep it at a post and you don't really do anything, the minute you start doing anything, boy, you better have that stuff in place, or you're going to be infiltrated and you're going to be brought down if you show any sign of being successful. So that's
okay,
where it
well,
is.
Here's
that's the reality.
Here's another comment. It's more of a comment from, and he signs his name Max French. So he says, hello. This is a little bit, I don't know how clear it is. As regards the tactics of Golden Dawn, Drury's strategy of fomenting civil war in white nations by flooding them with non-white refugees seems to be working very well, judging the unfortunate tactics used by various white nationalist groups. Okay, unfortunate tactics. News reports of whites beating up non-whites instills guilt in the target white audience and furthers the Jewish supremacist strategy.
Wrong.
Well, he might be all wrong here.
Completely wrong.
A derail in the path of this Jewish locomotive. I think he's saying this is a derail. His punctuation is a little wrong. Identifying and attacking the Jewish origins of this refugee flood. He thinks that will do it. Calling for an alliance with these refugees against the common Jewish world enemy, thereby destroying this well-used tactic. Once Jewry's plan for a global plantation are destroyed, racial homelands will spring up overnight. For those questioning these tactics, I suggest they ask the local rabbi for his opinion. We need to fight smart, in parentheses, for a change.
Well, who's beating up invaders in America? No one's beating them up. And so they are identifying the Jews. We've identified from day one. What do I always point to? I always point to Kevin MacDonald's immigration essay that points out Jews were the only factor behind the 1965 law change that results in America going from 90% white to, 65% white. Jews are the only factor. And who do a lot of these people who are basically functional conservatives or implicit conservatives, to use MacDonald's terminology with a twist, who do they? Oh, they blame big business. Well, yeah, it's big business now because the rules have been set so that we're globalized. We're not a nation. They have to play by global rules. They have to try to seek the lowest wager cost. But it was not big business driving the change in 1965 that fundamentally altered the racial composition of the nation. It was organized Jews. So we've been saying that. Those of us who are real white nationalists have been saying that since day one and pointing people to that essay and upholding that truth and rejecting the alternative neocon explanation of big business. But that alone is not enough. Golden Dawn is succeeding precisely because through its connections to the cops, they're basically turning their heads as the Greek citizens in these people's committees are beating the hell out of a lot of these invaders. So saying, oh, we shouldn't, it doesn't play into Jews' hands. It's not like we have any power to give the Jews. They already have almost 100% of the power. When these people are protecting their own people in these inner Athens neighborhoods, these old women who want to go out and people who are starving, don't have jobs, are giving them soup. People who want to go collect their money, they're taking the women, they're providing them bodyguard services. That's exactly what we should be doing. And on their own in these ad hoc local groups, they're getting together in gangs and beating the hell out of the invaders. That's exactly the right thing to do, and it manifestly works. And look
but
at
you
all
can,
the human...
Yeah, yeah.
If you think, my God, we got someone talking down people actually physically defending other white people, that's crazy. It's because we haven't done stuff like that in the U.S., that it continues, or that's one reason it continues. But the fact is we face – the cops wouldn't turn their heads if we tried to do it here. So we have like the prior problem of getting the cops enough on our side to where we were able to physically defend our country. But you think
that in Greece it's kind of – they're kind of in a similar – I don't want to say they're the same at all, but there's a similarity to where Germany was in the 20s and then in the early 30s.
I am very, very far from the kind of society.
What?
Well, yes and no. I mean, you've got to look at the context here. What are we talking about? We're talking about 10, 11 million people is the population of Greece. Mm-hmm. About 1 million of them are invaders. That's like where they all come in from Europe. And because of the EU or whatever it is, Schengen or whatever, the first country that the invader comes into. Now, a lot of the invaders are trying to get to France, Germany, or wherever. By the terms of that agreement, they get sent back to Greece if they get caught. The point is these people are coming into Greece so that like a tenth of the population is these illegal invaders, and they're messing things up for the local. They don't have any money or they're taking jobs or whatever. There's lots of friction, as you can see. And basically, Greece doesn't have this embedded human rights hate infrastructure the Jews have everywhere else because it's kind of a marginal country on the mm-hmm. margins of Europe. But it happens to be that, kind of the gateway into Turkey and the rest of the places. So Mikhail Oliakos, and my God, that's a hard name to say. I'll just say M, who's the head of the party, and Kassidiaris have a special forces background. They have connections to the military and the army and the special forces and the police. And through these, that's why they're able to do what they're able to do. We have to build that kind of thing in other countries if we're to have the same kind of results they've enjoyed.
Well, they have a different kind of a country, which I've argued to you a little bit. But do you think that they're going by a very much similar to the National Socialist playbook?
Yes.
this
yeah,
party.
Yeah, I think they are.
Yeah, yeah.
But again,
can get away with that in Greece because of the conditions. It's a small country, but mostly because it's not as well organized, and the Greeks are not as like. I've got some comment here. I don't know if I should bring that up right now or wait if you want to continue with what you were saying about the Greek.
Just on Greece again. I don't know a lot about Greece, but I've been following the last month or two very closely. Literally every article that appears on Golden Dawn Ring. Yeah, they're using what are Nazi tactics, but they're not. I prefer to say tactics the Nazis also used. Why do they use them? Because they work. Okay, they're not Nazi. So many people hate Nazi stuff or German stuff because they're British. They're British biased. That's the fundamental America bias. Stuff German is bad. Stuff British is good. That is blinding these people, including people like McDonald and other people like that, from seeing that, no, this is the Germans were ahead in this area, the social engineering of Jew control, the same way they're ahead in automotive technology. They're damn smart people. They're damn organized. They're damn serious. I studied abroad there. I saw what they're like. It's a more masculine culture than we have in the glad-handing, back-slapping, baby-kissing culture in the U.S. where everything's friendly, but it's also very fake. The friendliness is real, but the fakeness is real, too. They don't get taken aside by personality. They focus on what works, dividing up ideology. That's what we need to be doing here. And once you do that and you stick to your principles, look at these guys. Look at Mikhail Oliakos and look at their main spokesman, Kassidiaris. They will overtly go after the media just like I do and attack them. That's what Goebbels did. That's what works. Whereas all these conservatives that McDonald and the other people emulate, I'm not a racist. I'm not a white. The minute you say I'm not a mm-hmm. You're on your back foot. You've lost.
I'm not a Holocaust psychologically denier.
Lost. Take your tips from the winners, not from the losers. Look at how the Jews do it. The Jews are the ultimate winners. Copy what the Jews do and copy what the people who defeated the Jews in the time and space did. That's where you take your tips from, not from these. I'm going to decline to say not from these effing losers, the conservatives. OK, and yet that's where white nationalism comes from. And that mindset of, my opponent's well-intentioned, get off that back foot and start attacking them. They're attacking you. Attack them back. If you attack them back, my God, you actually have a chance to win verbally and physically.
Okay. Well, here's another thing about the parties, political parties. Now, the Golden Dawn first formed a political party in 1993, and then they joined with the Patriotic Alliance, another political party, and they kind of were absorbed by that. And then the alliance ceased operations after Mikhail Oliakos withdrew support. He's the current leader of Golden Dawn. And then in 2007, Golden Dawn held a sixth conference. It's sixth. And party officials announced resumption of their political activism, and they went back to their name, which we translate as Golden Dawn. And they started doing better. Well, they first got some seats. They first did pretty well in the voting in 2010. And then in the last election, 2012, of course, they've got now 18 seats in the national parliament.
Yeah.
This is a pattern that the National Socialists in Germany followed. It was tough. It's hard. It's long. It takes a while. But there are a lot of people who are saying, well, we don't want to get into any political parties or do anything the way they did it. We don't want to do any of that stuff anymore.
Well,
we're going to do it with culture.
Yeah, well, as long as the Jews control cable television, which basically is culture in America because people don't read. And they
we're having a bunch of static.
For the minority that does read, you're not going to change the culture from the grassroots and overtake the powers that be.
There's a bunch of static all of a sudden, Alex. Are you doing anything, or is this something on Skype? I'm not sure what it is.
No, I've got something set up.
Well, I don't know where this is.
I'm trying to move as little as possible. I don't hear anything on my end.
Well, and maybe it's just something that's happening to me and it's not being broadcast. So, okay, go ahead. I'm sorry I interrupted you.
No, let's say when times are, you do need a huge decline. That's what really drove the Nazis in the later years of the 20s when things got better in Germany. The Nazis weren't doing so well. And remember, even at their peak, they only had about 33% to 40% of the population. So you don't need a majority, and you do need very bad times, because otherwise, if the system is providing, people aren't going to go for radical solutions. But what's happening now is times are very bad in Greece. Huge unemployment, They have the austerity battle, which is basically they have a terrible public sector. They've taken on these loans and they're trying to screw the public and make them pay for it instead of the guilty bankers. And so the people are suffering. And then on top of that, you throw this invasion from the third world, and this makes a cauldron and, you know, a witch's brew. And the people are really suffering from this. And so they're polarizing. And remember, Golden Dawn at most has got 7% of the vote so far. That's the right extreme. The left extreme, this Syriza, which is a coalition of radical leftist groups, including the overt communists, they have, you know, much more than 7%. They probably have what? I should know the number. I can't think of it. Probably three times that. But, of course, all the media play is about the Golden Dawn because they're daring to fight back physically against these invaders who are attacking them. You see? Mm-hmm. So the point is that in times of great despair or distress, the center will disappear and people will polarize into one of two more radical solutions than they would be willing to consider during peacetime.
When things get better, if things were to get better, then these parties don't do so well until back to not having any, not winning anything again.
That's right. But it doesn't look like the invasion from the third world is going to stop anytime soon. If they're able to move from beating these invaders to killing them, it might. Mm-hmm. I'd love to see it. I love the radicalism put out there by the M&K, the two main guys for Golden Dawn. I love that. You know, they attack the media. They say let's put a minefield on the border with Turkey. They haven't been tied to any of this violence either. Even these communists writing the human rights equals anti-white. You know, anti-racist equals anti-white. Well, human rights equals anti-white too. I mean, even they admit they can't tie Golden Dawn to those attacks on the invaders because it's basically just organic, localized, semi-organized reaction from natives. It's a real grassroots thing. You know, and these Jewish papers don't write about the crimes committed by these invaders against the natives. They only write when the natives fight back. So Golden Dawn is doing it just about perfectly, as best I can tell.
Well, probably that's why they're getting somewhere, although they're not, you know, the Greeks don't have a history. They have a history of being great fighters and independence and protecting their independence and so on. So this all fits in well with them. But they don't have a good history of producing on a consistent basis, you know, and behaving in a very responsible way all the time. So, you know, they just
what is Greece? It's an Aegean island in a bunch of islands in the Mediterranean. It's a beautiful place. You can't expect them to be all super, you know, beavering away and working like people up in the cold north.
No, they're not.
They're a different kind of people.
Yeah. So the thing is, how do you translate this, what the Greeks can do? They can do these dramatic and impressive nationalist type of actions and make some headway for a while anyway. But how do we translate that to these other countries?
Well, we translate it by just what we've already said. How have they been able to succeed like this? Because they have connections in the police and the military.
Okay,
that's what is letting them get away with the physical violence. And as for the rest, they're copying a known model. I don't even know the Nazis invented it. Hamas does the same thing. They're providing there's a hard tier and the soft tier. The hard tier is fighting your enemies physically and intellectually. The soft tier is educating and helping your own people. What do? They help the old women. They fight fires. They provide soup kitchens. That's something that the Nazis did. The Nazis had Winterhilfe. Mm-hmm. Because people are, you know, they're being starved, literally starved by the Allies, and the Nazis put out soup kitchens to help. The Greeks are doing that same thing because our people are really suffering. When you do that, maybe a man doesn't agree with you intellectually, but if you're giving him his daily bread, pretty soon he's going to definitely be open-minded to what you have to say politically. They're providing.
Well, this is what Hamas and Hezbollah do too.
Exactly.
You know, this is the way you work with people. You help the people.
Carolyn, that's not a Greek thing. That's not
a
German thing. That's an everybody thing.
Yeah.
So what can we do? We could do the same thing if we help white people after like Katrina or something, you know, whatever white people need. And there's a lot of misery out there. It's a bad economic time. I've known people, you know, in this area, they're living in a trailer park without even a water heater, without any heat. I mean, it's bad for a lot of white people.
There's so many poor white people. It isn't even funny.
And who helps them?
Starting to, look pathetic.
So if it's the same thing everywhere. Can you defend your own people? Can you provide for them?
These are smaller countries. You know, Greece, even Germany was very small compared to the United States. The problem, you know, we have the most freedom still here in the United States, and yet we're so big and spread out, and we have a very powerful and heavy-handed federal government. It's true. I don't think you can form national parties. I think it has to be local in some way, don't you?
Yeah, in the sense of providing the help and the soft stuff. They always say all politics is local. For the national stuff, it could be national, and it can be both. It should be both. For the national, I would take a little different approach than what I've seen other people take. It wouldn't even necessarily have to start as a party, but yeah, ultimately it's going to have to be people on the ground are providing this kind of help, and then ideologically they're linked through websites, and they have a common understanding and a common approach so that they're all on the same page. And too often people have thought, oh, let's just overlook differences. No, that's the wrong way to do it. You want to have a very definite agenda. This is what we believe. This is what we stand for, and make sure that that's what all these people who say they're you believe the same thing. We have right now half the people who call themselves white nationalists think Jews are just fine. Or working with people who think Jews are just fine is just fine. Neither of those is just fine. Mm-hmm. And these people are clowns. It's like the ADL would admit people like me into their innermost meanings. Oh yeah, he's a little Jew critical. He's basically all right guy. He's not again. You know, these people are idiots. They have no conception. I think it's because we have such a southern non-intellectual basis of white nationalists. They have no conception of the enemy that they're dealing with, and experience doesn't really teach them anything. Very inward looking. That's why I've always tried to focus outside the South. Focus on people who are more vicious and intellectual, not people who are Bible bound, hide bound conservatives who are just, you know, we're going to rise again. We're going to resist.
There is a kind of what do you call it? A decency or sort of a laid back quality about the Southerners.
Well, it's like they make ideal people to live among and neighbors and whatever, but maybe what you need to preserve that culture is not what you need within that culture, if you see what I mean. It's like the North, you have these very aggressive, vicious, intellectual types, paranoid, hostile types that the Jews are, and Southern culture is completely not fitted to fighting that kind of a culture. That's why I've always thought if we ever get something real white nationalist going, it's not going to come from the South. It's going to come from people like, well, Pierce, you could say I was from Texas. Okay, is that South? I don't know. Borderline,
well, but people
like
McDonald,
people who are not Southerners, they're not built to understand the Jew. They're just a different type of people.
Okay,
well, but their basic culture is what I like about the South is the decentralization, you know, and not trying to moralize and force other people to fit your scheme the way that the Puritans did. That's the good part of it. That's the part we want to preserve. But fighting the Jews, you're going to end up following what are called Nazi tactics, whether you like German stuff or not. That isn't simply the fact of the matter. They figured it out.
Yes.
And most of their lessons still pertain today. And I say, everybody go read the essays at translated essays at calvin.edu if you haven't already, and just see the writing of Hitler and Goebbels and those people is more relevant to our times today, nearly 100 years later, than basically anything you'll see any white nationalist write. And that is...
It really is. It's great. It's just great stuff. I mean, we should
on one
all
hand,
be spending
sad.
More time
it's
putting
sad.
It out.
Not doing better, but on the other hand, it's a great testament to how brilliant and tough those people actually were. And they deserve credit for that. And a lot of the British people are people who Americans simply won't give it to them. But that's where you got to look for your lessons, man. It's not to the Confederacy or to the conservatives. They never won anything. Look to the people who actually defeated the Jews in a serious, major, industrialized country for a time and a space. And that's where the first place you would go to get your lessons. And if they find out how much of what they say is outdated...
That's not even Greece. The Greeks haven't done that. The Greeks didn't do that.
I don't know.
Although I'm not being anti-Greek, because I'm all for this party. I'm all for their success there. I like these people down there. You know, these nationalists and so on. I like the national spirit in any country.
Don't you think But look, even their symbol looks kind of Nazi-like. I think they've.
Oh yeah, but I mean they themselves. I mean, the Greeks never defeated the Jews, or never were a major industrialized country that did that.
Well,
the only country that fits that is Germany, as far as unless you can think of another one.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know to what extent Jews have ever been a major power in Greece. I would assume they're involved with the press like they seem to be everywhere. But, you know, the point is now that Greece has these huge problems that face every white country in the West, they're basically using the Nazi tactics to restore order, and it's working. So
yeah.
I think that's okay. What's
their immigration is their big thing, although they're Jew-wise. They understand all that. There's another listener, and since, you know, if they call, they would get heard, so I should read this. This is, from Bob in D.C., but since you don't believe in censorship, Alex, I'm going to go ahead and read this rather than censor it, and I'm not going to ignore him. He says, I always suspected that was the case. He says, Alex, this is titled Alex Linder's Rounder. I always suspected that was the case, that Alex needed on-the-ground experience and so brought on board the songster, Glenn Fraser Miller. That is a big mistake. At the very least, Miller should have remained a sub Rosa helper, no more. That's it.
Well, I mean, I never started a party, so there's no point. If I was starting a party, I would certainly use Rounder's advice on running it, but... So that comment doesn't really pertain. You got to understand, if you weren't aware already, lots of people hate him because he was involved with the order, and then they call Miller a rat, even though the order ratted him out years before he ever said anything in court, and no one was ever convicted because of what he said. So he's hated by a lot of people. That stuff is not worth going into.
No, it isn't.
I made up my decision and whatever, but the point is, yeah, if I were actually trying to build a party, Rounder is very much someone I would go to for advice on how to do it, because he did it better than anyone else has done it in America in the last 70 years now, pretty much. But we never seriously tried to build a party.
No.
Rounder just helped with our other activism, like publishing the paper, which is basically his idea. But other than that, it's just, you know, someone who posts.
Here's here's another comment. I think it looks like a comment from Hadding. That advantage of having support among police would be less valuable if Greece were not a corrupt society where police feel that it is not extraordinary to express personal bias in their work. In the U.S., a political movement that had substantial support among police would still have to obey the law scrupulously.
Hadding is delusional. Hadding is absolutely delusional. I mean, if you think the police in the U.S., just the other day they busted in some... The world doesn't work the way that he thinks it works in terms of, oh, the cops are following the law. We have to follow. That's the mentality I was talking against earlier. Oh, if we follow the law, we'll be safe. Well, geez, how about the person the other day who followed the law and heard someone breaking it, and he gets up and the cops just shoot him dead. And afterwards, they're all cocking off about it. Oh, if you point your gun at the police, you can expect to be shot. Simply follow the law.
Well, yeah, but if the police in the United States the police don't follow the law. They couldn't get away with shooting they can get away with attacking us,
yeah.
But they can't get away with attacking anything that the Jews are sponsoring.
They are following the law. All they need is a judge signing off that they have the right to conduct a search. And if they have the wrong place and they bust, like say a bunch of apartments, they bust into one looking for drugs and they don't find it, or they get the wrong place, or they shoot someone dead because they got the wrong place. Oh, well, that's perfectly legal. So, you know, the idea that the cops follow the law is basically a joke.
Well, I think they do, basically, because if they're being used by the powers that be, they can get away with things. But if they're not, and if they're going against those powers, then they're not going to get away with it. That's how it seems.
Look, I know what Hadding believes. He's of the delusional belief that basically, all the white people I mentioned were brought down because they didn't follow the law, and if they had, they would have been just fine. And that's counterfactual. These people were brought down by illegal means, most of them. And, you know, good example is like Father Coughlin, and again, not a white nationalist example, more of a traditional Catholic who would criticize the Jews, and he had, even the name of his publication might have been Social Justice or something, which is kind of a strangely Jewish name, come to think of it. But he had his publication on newsstands all over New York City and all over the country. And the Jews would organize behind the scenes and just destroy these newsstands where his thing was located. And eventually that combined with like mail pressure resulted in his being brought down. This is not legal activity. This is illegal activity, bringing down something basically 1,000 times bigger than white nationalism has ever created in this country. So he say, oh, if we just, it's because he basically doesn't understand people, that he really believes that if we just follow the law, that all these white people have been brought down were brought down because they didn't follow the law. That is absolutely not true. I could sit here and list 50 ways I've been illegally messed with by the powers that be, or by the cat paws that they have out there, you know, knocking you off websites that, oh, you know, everywhere, if blacks were doing the stuff I was doing, oh, it's civil rights. They've violated my civil rights all kinds of times. You don't have any way to prosecute it because they just laugh at it. It only works one way. So he's encouraging people basically to believe in delusional stuff that will cause problems for them. You need to see it the way it is.
Well, how do we get the police? How do we get police on our side? You think there probably are police on our side. But amongst all the police, are such a they're not really, basically, we don't have police on our side.
Well, look at what's happening in
National Socialist Germany. Things were still looser. They weren't quite so.
Very, very much so. We're actually in a considerably worse position than Hitler's people were, because a lot of the system was more or less on Hitler's side. The mm-hmm. Jews had a heck of a lot of power, but there were still lots of judges and lots of some media and lots of police and lots of soldiers, because it was a very militarized time coming off World War I, who were on his side, and that got them at least equal treatment, so that they could go out and do their battles with, you know, a lot of these delusional people will say, oh, you know, Hitler took power legally. Well, you know, there is at least one battle where there are like 300 Nazis and communists, you know, killed in a street fight. That's not legal. Mm-hmm. It's not legal to go around shooting people
in
the street.
Yeah, you can't do that.
Goebbels was in and out of court his entire political life, trying to turn Berlin from red Berlin to brown Berlin, which he eventually succeeded. Now, how do we get police? I don't know. I guess you got to have a lot of friends, or you got to grow your personal networks. You got to have some of them be persuaded by what they're hearing from us and come over to our side. But you also need military people. But I mean, also, if people don't feel the stuff is worth killing and dying over, then I guess we just continue as we are. And then
that's it. If we're not looking for that, we don't understand that that's necessary. We're not working toward that. It's not going to happen.
But I mean, if it's just about writing and
talking and discussing.
Well, yeah, if you can't do the hard stuff, then you got to do the soft stuff. And that's what we're doing. We're doing the education and explaining to people, here's what's going on. We could be doing curriculum stuff. We could be doing the soup kitchen stuff. There's all kinds of stuff we could be doing that we're not. That would be Hadding's point. We're not exercising our full potential within what is legal. And that's certainly true. That's certainly true. What I object to is that he uses that to occlude the greater, more significant, and most meaningful fact that our organizations have been brought down and will continue to be brought down by illegal means by the Jews running the country. That's the main point. And he will usually try to deny that. But very definitely, I agree with him that we need to be doing everything we can legally, and we're not doing that much, and we should be doing more. But then again, yeah, we're working as hard as we can. Look at how many more sites there are. Look at how many more people are talking about this stuff. When I go to non-white nationalist sites, this is something I said as a law many years ago. The comment section of a mainstream paper is always to the right of the editors and the writers, right? So whenever people are allowed to comment freely, they sound a lot more like VNN than they do like CNN, because the people are basically right-wing racialists, a heck of a lot of them. And that's why the Jews are the only people who control the media, or need to, right? To twist Twain's comment about man being the only animal that feels shame or needs to. The Jews have to control the media because theirs is the minority position, and not just the minority position, the tiny minority position. The Jews allied with the muds, allied with the sex deviants, the freaks, the homos, the pedophiles. Those all together come together, those freaks, those abnormals, those weirdos, and take over the media, and then they can normalize what they do, and they can pathologize what we, the normal majority, believe in and do.
They have
to control the media. We are the default white position. That's why we are the true voice of the community. We are speaking from a true place of strength. That's why over-focused on we need to argue. No, we're just normal white people. What do we label? We shouldn't worry about what we're labeling. We're just normal white people. We don't want to live in communities that are full of niggers who are attacking people. Mm-hmm. And we didn't until the Jews reinterpreted an ancient law and standing law. They destroyed they forced what they called fair housing to force these apes among us. And then when they attack us, they cover that up. We didn't do any of that. They did it. We didn't throw open the borders. The Jews did it. Stop blaming us for what we didn't do. So the type of white that's going to go through this genetic bottleneck the West is facing is going to be much more vicious and intellectual and smarter, sharper, shrewder. So maybe we should thank the Jews, because the whites that make it through are going to be a lot more VNN-like than they're going to be Christ-like, and that'll be a damn good thing.
Well, back to the street fighting and so on. You know, in this on Wikipedia about the Golden Dawn Party, it says that in this head of the party, he went to prison at some point, and there he met the leaders of the Greek military junta, 1967 to 1974, and there he laid the foundations for the Golden Dawn Party. And then in 1992, members of the party attacked left-wing students at the Athens University of Economics and Business during a massive demonstration against the use of the name Macedonia. You know, just something that Greeks would care about.
Sure, yeah.
A certain nationalist type thinking. And they got away with that. And then around the same time, some far-right street gangs appeared under somebody else's leadership, who was a former military officer, this Giannopoulos, who was involved with the South African Afrikaner movement.
Exactly.
During the 80s. Anyway, but they, you know, they could do these things, and they weren't immediately, this kind of thing wasn't stopped, that, you know, they could get out there. So Bill White was trying to get some people, a few people he had, to go out and start things to get news. To get newsworthiness, you know, to get talked about.
Well, yeah.
And, he didn't succeed too well, because these people they were all infiltrators who didn't do what they said they were going to do. But anyway, should this be done? Do you think this is something should be done to go out and want to do a march or something?
Well,
these things always seem to backfire. When they did that march in Skokie, that big fake thing, we end up with the Skokie Holocaust Museum.
Well, you know, the Holocaust Museum, they're commoner than McDonald's. I mean, they're just Jewish garbage centers. I don't worry about that. No, the problem here that we face is we have the First Amendment. So, right, we have the legal. But like we saw, one of the things I was better known for was doing getting the Knoxville thing started. Mm-hmm. First, Shannon Christian and Chris Newsom were raped, tortured, murdered. Really?
Yes.
Terribly.
Yeah, I followed that real
and
carefully.
You know, we do a rally, but here's the deal. There's settled law now, and I got arrested because I walked down the middle of the street. The settled law that's agreed on by signed off on by the courts, right, is that free speech still exists when the cops can limit your demonstration to a particular area, and basically they can set the time, place, and circumstance of your demonstration, thereby, in my view, essentially gelding it, neutering, cutting the balls off it. It's no use. I go there. This is the difference between radical and conservative. I want to talk to people in their face where they can look in my eyes and see what kind of a man I am, because, you know, that's 80% of your communication. Is this guy serious or is he a clown? I can win them over. See, this is how Hitler did it.
Yeah,
if
that's
only
what
want
I was
to speak
say,
to other
that's
people.
That's the way they speak about Hitler.
And see,
all
that
the time.
That's why I walk down the street. I want to get in front of even these people dressed as clowns and say, look, you're going to listen to what I say. If you want to jeer or you want to talk seriously, I can take you either way, because I can. But, you know, they arrest me because, oh, no, you know, we have to have a zone where the courts have made it so basically there is no serious demonstration ability that whites can do where they can actually get in touch with the public and try to persuade them. So that's a technical problem that kind of invalidates, you know, doing rallies. What's the friggin' point? They really have made it to where your options are, you know, talk on the internet or go do illegal actions. I mean, if they won't let you come face to face with the public, how are you ever going to persuade them? And yet, if you don't take over the streets, you're never going to have any real political power. The power begins in the streets. That's what the Nazis said, and that's what Golden Dawn is showing. What happens when these ad hoc committees of local citizens in they get together 20 of them, they go beat the shit out of two or three you know, these invaders. What happens? Those invaders hole up in their room. You'll see him quoted in the Human Rights Report. Geez, if I knew it was going to be like that, I never would have left Somalia or Pakistan or Afghanistan. I would have stayed there, man. It's not any better. That's exactly what you want them thinking. And if they start killing them, they'll probably start going back. That's what it takes, man. You can't get it done with mere mouthings, you know? And these people, oh, keep it safe, keep it legal. These are just fundraisers. They're just conservatives. So many of the white nationalists are implicit, or I like to say better, functional conservatives. They mouth white nationalist things, but they don't really get it, man. This is not about raising funds for your 501c educational foundation. It's about protecting your damn genetic line against these people who are trying to wipe it out. And if you don't think that that involves whatever it takes, leave legality aside. You have to do what you have to do. That's how the Jews got on top. And they're driving us into the ground. You're not even willing to. Oh, no, it's very important to stay legal. We must stay legal. Why don't you quit worrying about what's legal and quit worry about what it takes to get the job done?
Because they don't want to be put in jail and they don't want to have a long protracted court case.
Of course they don't. And they're quite right. Jail is horrible. I've had the good fortune to only be in there a couple of times for a few hours. It fucking sucks. You're locked in a toilet stall. Yeah. With a bunch of niggers and a bunch of white people who might as well be niggers. And half of them are screaming at the top of their lungs because they're idiots with no brains and no emotional control. Jail is terrible.
Yeah.
And they're right to be afraid. But damn it, if we're going to be afraid, then we're going to be slaves.
I guess we have to get across the seriousness of this. You know, that's about all I can do because I'm not going to go out and start talking on street.
Oh, I mean, you know,
we do have to get across how serious this is, and it can't be put off either.
I would agree. I mean, sorry, I'm a little congested, but
it's okay. While you're decongesting, I'll say there's another comment here. It's a question too, that somebody Skyped into me, and I'm going to read it to you before we run out of time.
Yeah, okay.
He says, "Bravo, Mr. Linder. How do we true nationalists marginalize the pseudo jello spines who concede the Jewish narrative, and how do we drive the point home that National Socialism is the only true white nationalism?" Well, first you have to say whether you agree with that or not. Then he says,
what was the last part of that? The first part.
We need to drive the point home that National Socialism is the only true white nationalism. This comes from Rodney Martin.
Well, I don't necessarily agree with that. I follow the Nazis where they're right and depart from them where they're wrong. If the Southerners don't mind me quoting Lincoln in a slightly different context, he said, "I must stand with a man when he's right and I must depart from him when he's wrong." I go with the Nazis for tactics. Ultimately, I would not want to live in a Nazi society. I just want a racial collectivism and decentralized microstates beneath that. But that's another discussion for another day. The question is,
well, how do you describe a Nazi society? Because there was one.
Well,
quite a few years in the 30s.
You had it's a form of socialism. Except it's the race is a vehicle for the protection advancement. I'm sorry, the state is a vehicle for the protection advancement of the race. I agree with the protection part, but for the rest, I don't want Nazis coming out and banning smoking. I don't want them, you know, basically forcing people onto chain gangs.
Well, I don't think they banned highways. Smoking. They didn't ban smoking. They just pointed out.
They were the first ones to be doing that kind of thing.
No, they didn't ban it. They just pointed out the dangers of it. They pointed it out before anybody else did. They never banned it. So you may have some wrong information because there was really a lot of freedom.
I'm wrong, but I thought they banned it in certain public places.
Oh, they may have banned it in public places, sure. Why, do you think that people should have to go into a restaurant or whatever and breathe in this other people's smoke in public
places? I totally believe that's up to the business owner.
Okay, are you a libertarian, sort of?
On non-racial stuff, yeah, pretty much.
Oh.
I don't think the government should be involved in money. I don't think it should be involved in anything except for race, because race is something where if you leave it up to individual choice and you bring blacks, it destroys my basis of life.
Well, so you care about race, so that you're saying that the government can control race, but not anything else. That's a little bit.
That's a little oversimplification, but it's pretty close. Yeah.
Well, but why pick out one thing that the government should do, but they can't.
The government controls because that's something where you. why does government exist? It exists to meet things that can't be met by purely individual decisions. And race is pretty much the only thing that that's true of. Everything else can be handled by private voluntary arrangements. I don't like being forced.
You think so? Huh? What about and the money? The money, the government should stay out of the money thing.
Exactly.
They should leave it up to the bankers.
Yes. Because if the government gets out of money, then when the bankers make bad decisions, they go broke. When the government's involved, it bails
bankers out. When have the bankers ever gone broke?
Oh, they went broke all the time in the 1900s when it wasn't backed by the feds.
Were they actually broke?
Heck yeah, they went out of business because it's like any market. If you supply an inferior product, people leave you and go to someone else. They're like, hey, your bananas are all brown. I want yellow or green bananas, I'm going to the other guy. Same money is the exact same thing. Why the problem we have now is the government backs all this stuff up, so it ends up being a bunch of Jews in the government printing money and handing it over to their friend Jew bankers who speculated and lost, and we have to pay for that through inflation. That's ridiculous. Whereas if the government wasn't involved in money, they would do all that speculating and lose the money, and that'd be their problem. It wouldn't be ours. We wouldn't have to pay for it. No, government only creates problems and makes problems worse. But collective racial defense is one thing we can't do as individuals. We have to do it as a society. But the rest, no. Private voluntary arrangements are a far better way to handle it. That's why the combination of the future.
Well, then your old conservatism is coming back out. You know, growing up as a conservative
though.
German. Yes, it is. Oh yeah, keep the state out of everything and private enterprise.
You can call it
everything.
What you want. I prefer simply not to label what I'm saying, just to argue it on its merits. And this is the exciting combination. Look, what's got all the young? Where does political radical change come? It comes from angry young men. Look at the pictures of Golden Dawn. They're angry young men and some angry young women. That's where radical change. What does conservative serve? They serve the old people who want to whine about things and write 501c3 fundraising checks to them. We have to get the young people radicalized. Who has done that most notably in the American political arena right now? Ron Paul. And yet all these
you are a Ron Paul fan, really?
No, I'm a racialist. I support most of Ron Paul supports freedom of association, which is the main legal thing we need restored for whites to protect themselves physically right now. He also goes after the corrupt money, so he does two of the right things. But racially, he spouts the same MLK garbage that the mainstream Paul. And look what he did when he did that last time. He totally undermined himself. We need to couple most of his appeal plus the racial thing that is kind of the heart and soul or the shell, to use a different metaphor, or the backbone, to use a different metaphor, of the whole thing. The whole thing is racial. So I'm not a libertarian because I don't truly believe in individual. I believe in white individualism. I don't believe in black individualism, though, or Jewish. They people do work as collective entities. I believe that whites are both men. And they're members of a community, and both of those.
Okay, if you're going to have a state that is a white state, okay, all white state, and you're going to exclude all these non-white people, and then you're going to say, now in this white state, it's all individualism, and everybody does pretty much what they want on it. You know, they make agreements between one another. Well, they make their agreements between one another.
Exactly.
There's no kinds of heavy-handed laws by the state. So your state is not going to stay white.
No, but that won't be allowed. It's not.
It doesn't make any sense to me.
Sure,
but
it
anyway.
Does. It's dictatorial on racial questions. I say that overtly. That's why I'm not truly a libertarian. I don't. The people who want to choose to mix with other races, either they can, if they're born into our system, they can have like the Amish, like, okay, you got 2 years to travel around the world and see if you want to live somewhere else. If you don't, you come back, then you deliberately sign our social contract. We make that a real thing and the racial thing. And the people who, before that, before we successfully complete the revolution, they will presumably fight us and either die or go abroad when we win. There won't be people left who don't want to be part of a white racial collective. Now, within that collective, how do we live among ourselves? I say we use freedom and let people group themselves as they like. Some will want a traditional Roman Catholic society. Some will want a socialist, Swedish, you know, cradle-to-grave welfare. People like me will want a libertarian. And they go into their separate microstates, as I call them. There could be 500 of them. But the one thing that they cannot disagree on is race. And if they disagree on that, then they have to leave. We're not going to allow them to destroy.
Well, who's not going to? Who's not going to? If you have all these microstates doing their own thing, How are you going to have such a strong
they're state
government.
Because the federal government over them won't allow that.
Okay.
So well, it's combining a dictatorship with a lot of individual freedom, and I fancy that it satisfies the white in us and the man in us.
Well, it might do that, but it doesn't sound very, very plausible. I mean, it doesn't sound very doable. I mean, it might satisfy what you like. Sure. But I don't know how doable it is. I've never even heard this before. I never heard this from you, you're taking me by surprise.
It is slightly a new. It's a new conception, or at least a new combination of old things. And some people, it's inherently contradictory. But I say it fits. I'm not just a white, and I'm not just a man. I'm both of those. So it's white manism, and man encompasses woman also. I have an individual identity, but I also have a racial identity. I can only flourish, I perceive, as an individual within a white collective racial context. I don't believe me and my kind can flourish where we're mixed with Mexicans and blacks. So I want to drive them and the Jews who sick them on our communities completely out. I want to exterminate them, drive them out of our space, and live as ourselves among ourselves. So it's just whites and maybe Asians and maybe Jews in Israel until we can figure out a way to nuke them. And that way we can reach a modus vivendi, you see?
Okay. That's the best that can be. You know, we've only got a few minutes left. Hadding has written back, so I'm going to read you this. I don't say that people will be safe for sure if they follow the law. I say that they definitely won't be safe if they break the law and expect even sympathetic police to support them in it. Not in the USA, not in Germany, in Greece or Italy, it could work.
Well, my very short response to that is I can guarantee personally to Hadding that you won't be safe if you follow the law. Parentheses, and you're saying anything a hundredth of what you know, I have said today and what we are saying in general.
Okay, and then someone named Carl, you might know who that is, writes that you are right about the cops being removed from racist groups illegally. He says the declassified FBI documents from the FBI show that the FBI illegally routed cops out of pro-white organizations.
And they also, well, yeah, they.
And he has a link here to where you can read about that.
Yeah, they vet, like, it's more of a concern even in the Army, but they vet all these people politically when you come in. Like, they don't care if you have La Raza or Mexican or black gang signs tattooed on your skin, but if you have anything racial, they want you out of the Army. They look at that very hard because they know that's where potential problems can come from someone like McVeigh, who's received the technical training. See, this is why I don't try to front or act like I have some kind of great martial ability. I don't have any of that kind of training. So, but you need that kind of training to be able to protect your kernel of activists and speakers and lawyers who can do the verbal stuff that will get you equal and eventually ahead of the Jews. You see what I'm saying? These are technical matters, and you need people with that technical training. The Jews know that, so they very carefully vet, like, they don't want anybody getting into the Army or into the upper ranks of the cops who has the wrong attitude, and they've learned over time how to weed these people out with various tests and questions and what have you.
But isn't it a mistake for people to put tattoos on themselves?
I don't think anybody should get a tattoo. I think it's completely trashy. But you know what? A very large percentage of the younger population has them.
Well, just to get off the track a little bit, because we've run out of time. But
and
I see too many women. They're not all that young either. Some of them, they've got tattoos all over them. And you wonder what these are. These brainless ones you were talking about.
They don't understand that there's nothing more sexually attractive to a man than a nice expanse of white skin.
Yeah.
Okay. You're going to cover it up with some fucking stupid looking bluebird.
These people have on their chest, their arms, their legs, their backs. I mean, I've seen them in this fitness center I go to.
I know.
Can't believe it. It's hard for me not to go up and talk to them and say, you know, what the hell are you thinking about? Or why did you do that? But anyway, okay, 10 seconds. Alex Linder, I want to thank you so much for being my guest today. You certainly brought a lot of listeners.
Carolyn, it's been fantastic. I want to thank you for having me. It's been a lot of fun, too.
Well, we didn't run out of things to say, but we did run out of time. So, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for being with us, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks for listening. And be sure to visit Carolyn's website at carolynyeager.com.